Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I hope you all enjoyed the holiday weekend here in America. I know I did. Coming up on today's show, it's UFC 302 Fight Week, and that means we have a lot of headlines to talk about surrounding Islam Makhachev against Dustin Poirier. Let's waste no time, boys and girls. I want to begin here. Conor McGregor out partying. What do you make of this? Now, and before you go, I don't make anything of it, and there's nothing to see here. And this has been the story of Conor his entire fight career. Yeah, I suppose. But it strikes me as different. And do you want to know why? Really only for one reason, which is everything that Conor had done as he was becoming a global star. Like an actual star. And a star is a different word. I know it gets thrown around, but it's a very different word. A star, for example, is somebody that can do something. In this case, combat. And in this case, Conor. But nothing else would matter. And people will stop what they're doing and tune in droves. You will have a profitable night of business in every measurable fashion in this industry. Live gate, merchandise, distribution, pay-per-view. Okay, great. But you wouldn't have to tell any part of the story. You wouldn't have to say what weight class, for example. When it would not matter. You would not have to say who the opponent is. Does not matter. If a guy is a star, it does not matter. You would not have to say what is on the line or where the placement is, what day of the week. This is rare. We've only had a couple ever. Ronda Rousey had her moment. You want to know who else, guys? Might surprise you. You want to know who the other star was? Kimbo Slice. Whatever he was doing. However he was doing it. Huge, huge numbers. I bring this to you because there's been a part of me this entire time that as Conor is out and living it up, I have always questioned, is he marketing? He seems to always get attention. It seems to be something that nobody else is doing. Which is, look at me, I'm drunk 1 week before the fight. Look at me, I'm at the club. And therefore, it was pretty easy to win that area, right? It was something different. It got people talking. And there was always a part of me on an individual level that just wondered, is that part of the show? Like, for example, when I see Conor in these videos and he's pouring one down, like there's a little part of me that goes, I wonder if that was actually beer in a glass. I wonder if he, you know, he's sitting up there with a press conference with Khabib and he's drinking whiskey. And there's a part of me going, nah, I wonder if there's actually whiskey in that bottle or if, you know, he put something else. And this is just part of the show. I've wondered, have you guys done that? The reason I bring it to you, and I tell you that this one felt a little bit different, is because now that he's here and now that he's established, now that the live gate has already been reported by Dana as an all-time industry-wide hit and a success, like there would be no more need for the stunt, if you will. And there is a time when you're going down this path where you will sell your soul for the greater good. You will do something publicly and perhaps stand on something publicly that you don't actually feel and or mean. You might even give a message out that you know is not the right message, but you'll justify it because it works in the moment. It's going to bring more eyes in, and down the road, I'll turn and make sure the correct information gets out to the people. Okay. So when I see Connor parting, what do you make of it? And while there could be a number of answers, I'm personalizing it and just letting you know, for me, I've always thought a piece of it could be marketing, and now I don't think that. So of the possible options, when I take that one off the board, what is left? Everybody's going to let their hair down. Everybody. It doesn't matter how disciplined or focused that you're being. But when I look at the fight of Connor versus Chandler, ultimate discipline goes out the window when the weight class gets established of 170 pounds. Like, the lifestyle that one would have to live, talking about Connor specifically, to make 145 pounds, back when his career started, it did not lend to the possibility of being out till all hours in the morning, even if it was only once in a five-week period. Like, it just didn't lend to that. Every calorie that was going into your body, input, output, the physiology, the amount of rest that you would need to get up the next day to go burn those calories to make 145 pounds, it just speaks to a level of discipline. It is so wildly important that weigh in. It's not just done for marketing. A picture is worth a thousand words, and that's why it's so important we face guys off. You will see lines in Vegas move. You will see the lines at my partner DraftKings. It will literally move after a weigh-in when one guy misses weight, because the question just becomes how? How and why did he miss weight? It's calories in versus calories out. So if he's heavier than he usually is, he did not burn enough calories or he consumed too many, right? Like, it does make you wonder. So the idea of discipline does get removed to a degree as soon as we go at 170 pounds. So why is he out at 2 a.m? Why is he drinking? And why, moreover, and easily the most important component, is do you know about it? Does Chandler know about it? Do I know about it to be making this? Why did he make sure that the cameras were there to capture it and release to the world that he's out at 2 a.m. during fight camp and drinking and partying? And that's where your options all of a sudden start really narrowing. And when you're confronted with the reality that it is not a marketing piece, then what is the story? What is the story and the message that the sport's greatest storyteller is attempting to get you to consume? John Jones played the same game. And John Jones eventually quit playing the game. But he told the world why he was doing it initially. And that was, he wanted to always have an excuse in case he lost. And not to you, the public. He wanted to have one for himself. If he would go to practice and he would work hard and he'd do what the coaches asked him, he'd put all that time in, but he would also go out and drink and have a good time. If he was to taste defeat, he could tell himself, well, yeah, but it was because of, like, I could fix it. I could beat that guy. I could do better in a rematch because I've already got this one thing that was a weakness and drawing me down. Like, if I just stopped doing that, and I fully understood it when John said that, that wasn't like exactly captivating news, because as human beings, we all have a piece of that. But what was so captivating is that John was admitting it. He was just speaking to it. And I do have to wonder if there's a piece of that happening here with Connor. I don't know why else that would come out. And we're just a couple of guys over here guessing. It doesn't have to be some deep thought. But generally, when you watch Connor, there is something at play. Generally, if you shot Connor, is it 2 a.m, secretly, he's actually pushing a whiskey brand. Or secretly in that message, he's pushing the club that he did that at. He got paid. Like there's always a message. There's always something. It's one of the things that has separated him and made him so good. There is no wasted effort. There is no video that is wasted time. If it's 2 a.m, for example, like an original and old school Conor McGregor, if it's 2 a.m, he's got a big fight coming up. At some point, he's going to look at his watch and going to demonstrate that it's 2 a.m. That's the message that's going to get around the world. But secretly, he got $1 million from the watch company. And that whole thing was a spoof to do that. And you zero in like that generally is how we would do it. But in this case, we just have a guy who is out partying and he can. Because he doesn't have to worry about the calories in versus the calories out because it's at a weight class that neither guy contends at. Openly making sure that the world knows that the discipline expected is not there. There's all sorts of interpretations to a story. But am I close? Is the interpretation I just laid out closely to the interpretation that you have? Poirier versus Islam. Who do you got, guys? I mean, how do you see this fight? When I go over to DraftKings and I check this thing out, you're not going to see a surprise. Islam's the favorite, right? He's like a minus 600 to Poirier's plus 400. I'm not giving you exact numbers here, but I don't have to. That doesn't surprise you. You know full well that Islam's going to be the favorite going into this. And you also know full well that if Islam is going to lose this fight to Poirier, it is very likely by finish. Dustin is going to have to finish him to beat him. It is far less likely that they could go the distance, turn to the judges, and Poirier gets his hand raised. All right. Now, I'm stating the obvious for you. There's a reason we have the fight, because none of us know those things to be true. I'm just sharing, like if you go over to DraftKings, you're not going to get hit with a great big surprise. But it's like anything. What happens next? And do you want to know why what happens next is so important? Because then you start to guess the athlete's motivations and desires and how bad does he want it going in. It's very few stories where a guy says, this is my last one. And he starts to bring the party and the celebration and his family comes and they all get tickets and they're going to send him off the right way, whatever that means. And then he goes out and has a great performance. In any sport that requires an athlete to dig deep, historically speaking, when is the last one? You don't see those depths. Dana White talks about it all the time. But if this is ever a sport that you're wondering, you're considering retiring, stop right there. The answer is you should retire. If you're ever on that fence of should I or should I, the answer is you should. Now, that's Dana White. That's his opinion. That's what he states on. I just want to share that with you because I do not predict for you with a victory or with a loss that Dustin Poirier retires. I don't predict that for you. But I do feel comfortable in telling you, with a loss, Dustin Poirier does not return to 155. Now, Dustin talked about, and this was just a week ago, he said, I don't want to climb that ladder again. I know I could. I know what it would take. I've done it many times. It's what's got me here now to the title shot with Islam. But I'm not going to do it again. And that seems very fair, but if you look at that, that could also mean he's going to retire, right? I mean, the UFC is a place exclusively for champions and guys that want to become champions. Like, as soon as it is established that you do not have a path to a championship, as soon as it is established that will not happen, you're no longer in the UFC. As somebody asked me, well, Chael, don't you think if Dustin loses that will almost guarantee it's going to be Dustin versus McGregor down the road? It's like, no, if Dustin loses, I guarantee you he will not be fighting McGregor. Guaranteed, absolutely not even a maybe. Like, if Dustin's coming off a loss, it wouldn't matter if Conor was to defeat Chandler or lose to Chandler. It wouldn't matter. If that match got made of Dustin versus Conor and there was no way to sell upon the public in any scenario that would bring the winner closer to a world title. You're not doing it in the UFC. Believe me, a lot of guys have tried. Huge names that you love in matches that you would have loved to have seen. And behind the scenes, it doesn't even get made because they are so fierce to that policy that this is a place for champions and contenders only. And I bring that up because what would that do with Dustin's motivation? What would that do with Dustin's drive? Would it help or hurt? You were to put yourself in his shoes and you were looking for that dig deep drive before you went over to DraftKings and placed your bet. And do you disagree with me, by the way? Like within your mind, if Dustin Poirier is going to win, if you feel Dustin is going to win, is there also a scenario where that's playing through in your mind where he wins by decision? And Dustin has a number of great submission techniques, but none of which are stronger than his guillotine. I only suggest that for you because all attacks, particularly finishing attacks, are armed with an element of surprise. And in this case, the element of surprise is gone. Islam is well aware of how good and strong Dustin is with the guillotine. That was the same information that Saint Denis had and added to his ability to defend the guillotine of Dustin Poirier. So, where does he beat him and when? And I think that you have an answer to that question. I think that you very much could see a knockout by Dustin Poirier. And the one thing that you will never have is a time within the fight, if you're an Islam fan, where you could exhale. And a lot of times you can. A lot of times it's simple math, right? If you're in a 5-round fight and you got a guy that moves a lot, he's used to movement. As soon as he banks 3 rounds, it's just math. As soon as he banks 3 rounds, he no longer has to beat the opponent or even tries. He just runs out the clock. But that's not a situation where you would see when you're taking on Poirier, is it? Dustin doesn't seem like one of those guys that you can frustrate and make quit. That is ever going to buy into the idea of a moral victory. I made it this far. I went the distance with him. Aw, shucks, you know. Guess it just wasn't my night. And that's also one thing that Islam knows. So now if you're Islam and you're well aware that your opponent has a guillotine and knockout ability, you take the knockout ability away by getting in close or taking him to the ground. When is the last time that you saw the guy on top get knocked out? So to do that, you also have to put yourself in danger of the guillotine, the other thing that you're worried about. Like it's really out of the frying pan and into the fire type situation. So Islam knows that he can do it, but it's probably not a situation where he wants to go out and trade too long. He's going to have to drag him to the ground. But to drag him to the ground, he's going to have to disguise it. Now, once he drags him to the ground and once he disguises it, don't forget, he's going to have to do that 5 times. Because every 5 minutes, the referee is going to bring you to your feet, give you a little rest, and then make you start over. Like, it is one of these situations where if you go to DraftKings, you're not going to be surprised. That's not going to strike you as a surprise when I come out and I'm the one that reveals to you that Islam is the favorite. But I do think that if you were to just question yourself, and we're just talking about broad opinion here, which is all a favorite is, what do the majority of the viewing public think? That's all that means. I think that I make a very good point with you when I also tell you that for those of you that believe Dustin is going to win, you don't think that he's going to win a decision. So if you're going to DraftKings, it would seem wise if you're placing the bet on the young man from Lafayette who surprised He surprised a lot of people a lot of times, including in his very last fight, that you just go a little bit of a step further and you talk about a finish. And if you're going to talk about a finish, do you think he's more likely to strangle him or knock him out? And the reason I'm asking you that isn't because your opinion overly weighs or that I'm even trying to get you to part with your money and place a bet. Not at all. I'm trying to get you to understand that when you have to deduce that, and you have to break down whether you think Dustin can finish him. And if you do think he can, you've got to establish how. Is he going to knock him out or is he going to strangle him? Because Islam Makhachev has to do that same deduction. And that's the one thing that we don't know. Khabib has been in there with Dustin. Khabib has a very good idea. Khabib is going to be able to take that information and knowledge. He's going to be able to pass it to Islam. But we don't know. Did Khabib feel Dustin was a bigger threat on his feet or in the grappling realm? And that's the part of these matches that start to be exciting. They start to be very interesting. You start to think, well, what can happen if Islam gets him down? And moreover, what happens if Islam cannot get him down? Overall, you go to DraftKings, you're not going to have a surprise. You're going to see Islam as the favorite. But there is a big question and there is a big discussion on how this fight ends. That doesn't just come from the Dustin Poirier believers. That also comes from Team Islam. How? What's the strategy going to be? Is he going to grind this thing out? Is he going to try to finish him? Is he going to go out there and trade with him, which all of a sudden starts changing those odds to more of a 50-50 battle? It's an interesting match. Predicting a winner seems easy. You just got to throw a name out. But predicting how that winner gets it done, things start to get a little bit more complicated. DraftKings taking action on Strickland versus Paulo Costa. Who do you think they've got as the favorite? And I want to ask it in this regard. It's a co-main event. Extremely relevant. Like, there's a number of matches that if DraftKings was setting a line, would change literally the favorite. The suggested outcome would change if it was five rounds versus three. I'm going to tell you again. Co-main event. Scheduled for three rounds. Who do you think the favorite? Strickland and Paulo Costa. And the answer to that is not only Strickland heavily. 2-1 favorite would be pretty strong. He's a little better than that. Oh, by the way, always has been. That is where that line started. Now, both guys are coming off of a loss. Strickland's was in January. It was for his championship. Big deal. Like, historically speaking, when you have guys coming back off of losses where there was stakes were so big, such as a world championship, it's a very big deal how they will generally respond. And in Strickland's case, I think a lot of us thought the stakes were going to be the exact same in that he would be fighting for that very championship. He would be getting a rematch against Rikas. So then you go to Paulo Costa. Now, anywhere Paulo goes, drama follows him. Can we agree? Like, he's really good at social media. He's really good at bringing attention. But one thing with Paulo Costa is there's so many things to consider prior to the fight. Such as, is he going to make weight? I mean, just to start with that, everybody in the world, including me, is trying to make him a 205-pounder. But he doesn't want to be a 205-pounder. He wants to stay at 185 pounds. And one of the reasons I bring this back and forth up is because when I look at that line at DraftKings, I feel as though this fight is really going under the radar. I don't know that I've seen a co-main event with as little attention as this one's had in a meaningful period of time. Not to mention, guys, I think it's a number one contenders match, at least for Strickland. Paulo Costa can make the argument anytime he wants. He's much like Robert Whittaker. Like, it doesn't overly matter what happened in your last fight or even your last three fights. The argument can be made off of one win, boom, that's the guy. Particularly when you look at the level of competition the Paulo Costa faces. He only takes on the best guys. And Strickland was all upset at one point that he wasn't given the nod and he wasn't given the Dricus fight. I mean, to the point one time he came out and even spoke about it publicly, and he never does that. But it was bothering him that much. And then when I stand back and I look at the board, and I look at all the pieces, I see that and I identify and go, okay, that's probably a number one contenders match. But I can't do any better than that. I can't do any better than to use the word probably. In fact, one of the reasons that I can't come in with a stronger word than probably is we don't have Izzy versus Dreykus done. At least not officially and announced. Then you're going to have Chimaev take on Whitaker. I think a lot of people are going to be looking at that. But before you name that a number one contenders match, it does depend on who the winner of the not yet announced fight between Duplessis and Adesanya is, right? Like, you start to see where this gets interesting. And if you're the guys over at DraftKings, let me ask you a question. If you're going to take money and you've got to be profitable and you're going to make a case to the world for Paulo Costa, then let me ask you a simple question. How? How does Paulo Costa beat him? And the circle of people that I talk to that pick Paulo think he's going to knock him out. That is the number one thing that I hear within my bubble. Well, does the likelihood of a knockout increase or decrease when a feature match like this goes from a potential 5 rounds down to 3? Like, that sprint becomes less important in your mind, or it becomes more important? Vitor Belfort, one of the greats ever. But there was a stat on Vitor at one time. This is many years ago. Matt Lindland was getting ready to fight him. I was in Matt's corner, so I was really studying these numbers on Vitor. So this is a period of time ago. But there was a stat on Vitor, who had been world champion, who was one of the great stars, who Jeff Blatnick, rest his soul, stated has no known weaknesses. But there was a stat on Vitor that would blow your mind. It was a long time ago, but it was either Vitor had never won a fight that went the distance, or Vitor had only won one fight that went the distance. But then you can even back it up from that, right? And this was a world champion. You can even back it up from that, which was, it was either Vitor had only won one fight beyond the second round, or Vitor had never won a fight that went out of the second round. It was something very interesting, but it lended to the idea of the sprint and the power and the threat that Vitor offered early. And I mention that because so many people that I speak to see that same thing within Paulo Costa. And Strickland is one of those guys who will give you an opportunity. Like, if you think standing up against Strickland is your best bet, and therefore Strickland's probably going to come in and wrestle you, he's not. Strickland will not tailor his offense around yours. Strickland will not tailor what he needs to do tactically based on what you're going to do. For example, Alex Pereira, great stand-up fighter. Strickland's ranked much higher. Strickland's got a way to go, but he's got to get a hold of him. He's got to drag him down. What we know about Pereira is largely reputation. We hadn't quite seen it yet, but we're told he's very good on his feet. That did not change one moment of Sean Strickland's experience with Alex Pereira. And then you can even fast forward. You could chalk it up to, okay, the lessons that Strickland learned. But now he's in there with Izzy. But it's the same deal. Sean Strickland believed in himself. And he did not tailor or change his tactics offensively due to his opponents. And that has to be considered. Like, if you're going over to DraftKings and you're placing a bet and you're sitting there, like most matches, and you're trying to play through in your mind, how's this match going to go? When it comes down to Sean Strickland, you already have your answer. Like, there's not a scenario where he's going to go out and just tackle the other guy, or where he's even going to go out and try to just tackle the other guy. That's before you get into the X's and O's that Paulo Costa is a very hard guy to take down and or keep down. Like, we don't have to get that far. If I'm asking you to go to DraftKings and to make your pick, what I'm largely asking you, what 90% of the question that I just asked you is, who do you think can win a kickboxing match between Sean Strickland and Paulo Costa? Whatever your answer is to that question, you're going to have the same answer when I ask you who's going to win an MMA fight between Sean Strickland and Paulo Costa. DraftKings has Strickland as a little better than 2-1. That's a big compliment to Sean Strickland. That's a big compliment to a guy that's coming in off of a defeat, who was upset that he wasn't getting a title shot. You're getting him in there in the first place without even guaranteeing this is a number one contendership. It's an interesting thing. Like, the psychology that comes with Strickland, what comes with coming off of a defeat, or comes from being a main event and having to move down a notch with such a dangerous opponent as Paulo Costa. And I feel with the drama of the weigh-in alone looming. Like, you talk about it's fight week. Well, it's also weigh-in week. And there seems to be no real dialogue of any suggestion that Paulo Costa is going to struggle making weight. And it just, everything feels a little bit off. And whenever something feels a little bit off, by the way, it ups the stakes. And I would be very curiously, psychologically, between these two guys, both coming off a loss, knowing everything that this means, possible number one contendership that has yet to be called as such. DraftKings says Strickland is two times more likely to beat Paulo Costa than the other way around. Do you agree? Ryan Garcia failed a drug test, according to media reports. And Ryan Garcia denies having ever taken drugs. And I must tell you, this is unlike any other failed drug test that I've seen. And that isn't to say that this hasn't been duplicated. I'm personalizing it. I haven't seen it. So this is done by VADA, and the announcement gets made by Devin Haney. What? Okay. Fair enough. Doesn't sound like it's true. Like, that's a really weird thing for the opponent, who, by the way, lost, to break such big of news that he would have had it got from somebody else. I mean, in a best case scenario, you have hearsay from a sore loser. It gets confirmed by Ryan Garcia. Like, none of us would know if this was even true, if they even got a negative assay back from a testing agency. We wouldn't even know that that happened. At the timeline that I'm telling the story, had it not been for Ryan Garcia, who said, yeah, that's true. Devin was given news that I failed a drug test for Osterine. I was given the same news. He confirmed, okay, well, that's interesting to me where I'm sitting. And the fight took place in New York. So any moment now, we will get the boring boilerplate, pre-printed, insert the name, from the New York State Athletic Commission saying that Ryan Garcia, pending further investigation, is hereby suspended. But that never happened. And another week went by and it never happened. And a little bit more time went by and it turned out that there was a different drug test that cleared Ryan Garcia, or there was two substances that were found in his system, and now one of them's not. He's only got to deal with one. Like, it was very confusing how this came out. That's no problem. These are complicated things. We'll just ask the New York State Athletic Commission. They're the ones with jurisdiction. They're the ones that are going to handle this, and we're going to ask them as soon as they start speaking about it, which to this day hasn't happened. As a matter of fact, Ryan Garcia is not suspended. As a matter of fact, it's not pending a hearing or an investigation. There, to our knowledge, is no investigation, and there, to our knowledge, is no pending hearing. There would be nothing to have a hearing about because he has not been suspended. So you start looking at this, and this is strange. This whole thing is very weird. And Ryan Garcia's innocence isn't something that I challenge or dispute on a personal note. It's just a matter of, at this point right now, what does he want? And I'm being realistic. I'm not being a genie pops out of a bottle and can put you in a time machine and move you back to where this never happened. I'm talking about realistically, right now, with this out there, with this believed, with people like Conor McGregor who have told you to disassociate with me because of this action. At this point in time, from a realistic standpoint, what it is that you want. They're not taking your money. They're not stopping you from earning a living. Right? That would be pulling your license. That would be fining you. That would be something within the contract in an agreement where you are now getting a lien put on your property by Devin Haney until you make good on such and such consequence. Like, those things aren't a piece of it. So let me go back. What is it that you want? And the answer is for this to go away. I just want you to quit talking about it. That would be the number one thing. And so Ryan Garcia had a legal team that put out a statement today, and it was awful. It was beyond awful. And the reason it was so bad is many, but if I was to just be really broad and really fast with you, it was too in detail. They attempted to plead their case. There isn't one reasonable person There are experts. They're not one regular, reasonable person that would read that, that would have any idea what his legal team is even trying to say. Now, if you are an expert and you do know what they're saying, yes, I agree. It makes perfect sense. But that isn't at all my point. This is something somebody's going to click on. It's going to be very fast. You're going to get right to the point. Ryan Garcia has never used a banned substance. And any suggestion otherwise is flawed. The end. And if you want to be a real strong legal team that earns your keep, find a way to word it where the person reading it interprets a subtle threat that if they are to go around and say that Garcia did do these things, you're going to come after him, whether you plan to or not. That would be a good legal team. That is not what he has. This was a terrible statement. And it becomes a slippery slope. If you're saying that he did not take the substance that the test is saying, then you are going after VADA, yes or no? Because this statement makes sure to do a lot of things, and not going after VADA's credibility is one of them. So it's yes or no. Are you attacking the credibility of VADA? Because if you are, I will now let you, I would believe that you are sincere within your beliefs. But if you're openly not willing to go as far as to question VADA, it puts a dent in your credibility, and they definitely did not question VADA. And where this got tested most recently was in the last presidential election that we have. There was people that came out against the voting machines saying it was rigged, and the company that owns those machines sued them publicly for making the claim and won over $70 million. So it is a big deal. If you're going to come out and say that he's clean while this test is saying he's dirty, are you taking on the testing agency or not? And Garcia's camp did not take on VADA. Okay, great. Well, that hurts your credibility. Then they went and did a hair sample. Now, a hair sample is very good science. It's very, very good science. I wouldn't expect anyone to know that, which is why it's weird that they included it in the article. Like their points were very fair. And if you were in court with an expert arbiter, you're probably going to make some headway. But we're not in court. It's in public opinion. And his legal team put out an article this long where they made sure to not do the only thing that can clear him, which is challenge VADA. And there's a lot of ways to challenge VADA that won't get you in a jam, by the way, which is chain of custody. That's the number one way people beat drug tests. It's not their innocence. It's not junk science. It's not a flawed lab. It's not even a tainted supplement. The number one way, all the way up to international court, is to challenge the chain of custody, which again, to a degree, would be challenging VADA, which this legal team went out of their way to use a lot of words and never do. So, okay, let's go back to this hair test. They've done their own hair test. Now, a hair test is an extremely good test. Like if the FBI themselves were to go out to get a search warrant, the highest form that they could get would be for a judge to allow them to go and take hair. Like it is a very, very good test. And one of the reasons it's so good is it can go back so incredibly far. A guy could do cocaine and that's out of his system in hours. On a hair test, he could have done it 5 months ago and it could show up. Just to give you an example. So Ryan Garcia's team goes and does a hair test. And now his legal team wants to submit the findings of the hair test, of which are clean to Ryan. But there again, who are they speaking to within this long-winded article? Are they speaking to the average Joe that didn't even know this happened and they just informed them? Are they speaking to the person that's casual and sort of paying attention and knows an excuse is almost the same as an admission, of which this whole thing is an excuse? Or are they speaking to the experts in the room? Because the experts in the room are going to let them know, don't give a damn about your hair test. At all. I don't at all care about your hair test. He's not in jeopardy because of your hair test. He's in jeopardy because of a urine test he gave to VADA and only that test. So unless you have a way to disprove this test, there is nothing else that you do. You could take a hair test today and tomorrow and the day after, and you could find something even better than that. And you could take a polygraph, and we could just keep on going through it. you're in a jam over this test. So whatever your defense is, it's got to tie into this test. Even if a weak argument, even if loosely done so, it's got to tie in and this is the one in question. So does your defense have anything to do with challenging this? I don't doubt the hair test. I don't doubt it at all. It could be doubted. Many people will. It's not as though he was there. It's not as though there was a subpoena. It's not as though we have any kind of proof that it was his hair. Many people could challenge it. I'm just sharing with you. I don't. I don't challenge it at all. But I don't need to. It's not the one in question. There's one test in question. It was done by Vada. Are you, Team Garcia, challenging Vada? It's a straight up yes or no. And according to the article and everything you've worked so hard to distract us from so far, the answer to that, and I could be wrong. I'm open to being wrong. Feel free to change your answer. But as of right now, no. Motorcycle officer, West Lynn, Oregon. Now, I know this gentleman. I'm going to leave his name out. But I'm going to tell you, he's a great guy. And everybody likes him, including me. And I'm really glad he's here. But I just want to set a stage for you for conversation. Okay. Would you guys happen to remember a road rage incident? Would you happen to remember that? Do you follow the channel enough? About 2 months ago, I told you a story about road rage. I had these folks were honking at me, which scared, it alerts and alarms me. So when I popped my head up my truck, they were then mad. Thinking that was me being aggressive and angry, not understanding, oh man, you frightened me, I see what's going on. All right, but do you remember me telling this story? And the whole thing was predicated, they were honking because a brand new sign had gone up. And by the way, this is right outside the studio. In fact, the literal road in question where at the end of it, there's a stop sign is where my car is parked right now. So, I mean, when I tell you outside the studio, like when some people say that, it's an expression. Not for me. It's right outside the studio. And the people were honking at me, not because I had done anything wrong and not because I was in danger. They were honking because there was a brand new sign. This four-way intersection has been here all of my lifetime. So let's just call it 50 years. But the sign was just put up. And I believe about 3 months right now, the sign was put up. So at the time when the folks honked at me, it was brand new. It'd been there a couple few weeks at the most. But because of the sign, you now have to turn right. Okay. And I'm just wondering if you guys remember that story. Because to go back to that moment, to that four-way stop, where that fateful day, I refused to turn right. Because like Pavlov's dog, right? You do the same thing over and over. Bring this to you because while I'm at that stop, and here's what my interpretation was. Again, I want you to picture this. Four-way stop. The police officer and I are facing each other. He's the first at his stop sign. I'm at the first at my stop sign. Nobody happens to be coming from the other directions. Now, there is, in fact, a sign, and it does say only, and it's got an arrow that points to the right. That's true. So, I'm going straight. Now, straight across, there's a few things that you would do if you're from Westland, which is a small town. But there's a Chevron for gas. There's a car wash. You could vacuum out your rig. And there's our one and only McDonald's. I go straight, and this cop, man, he hits the lights. He hits a U-turn. He pulls me right over. Thinking, I wonder why he pulled me over. So, comes up to the window and asks the same thing they all ask. Is there any reason that you would have, and I don't have a reason other than my interpretation, is that if I'm going to turn, I have to turn right. Of course I can go straight, but if I'm going to turn, I'm going to turn right, which is wrong. I'm finding out now that he pulls me over, I have interpreted that wrong. Fair enough. Though that does surprise me. I mean, I got to tell you, it's a little bit of a surprise that you can't go straight. We got all this business over here, right? Our only McDonald's is our Chevron. And you got all this enterprise, and you're telling me I've got to go up and around. I got to loop through. If I was the business owners, if I owned the Chevron and the McDonald's, which are a pretty big conglomerates, I'm going to have a real problem with that. If I came in and I set up shop and I'm kicking into a city, and a city later makes it difficult for customers to get to me, I'm going to have a problem with that. That doesn't change my stance. Just adding to you why my interpretation that the sign that says only with an arrow. Then if you're going to turn, you have to go that way, but you are free to go straight. You might be laughing at me, and you might have all known. I actually took the time to explain that on the belief that you don't know that. We can all learn something together. Now, it's like anything, right? You say it's not about the ticket, but I'm sure it is. You ever have a guy that complains about money, but then he'll tell the people he's complaining. It's not the money. It's the principle. No, it's the money. But I feel as though I don't mind tickets. Like, that sounds appropriate to me. You have a city, and you have rules, and if somebody breaks the rules, I don't think you should pull them out of the car and cane them. I feel like a ticket is very appropriate. And I feel like everybody should follow the rules. I think I don't have a problem with it. But it's like so many other things. It's now not what happened. It's what was said. And I did say that to the officer. Yes, I saw the sign. My interpretation was if I was going to turn, I didn't turn. I went straight. And he responded back to tell me, no, you can only turn. You can't go straight. And that's why you had to jump the curb to get to the point you're in right now, pulled over by going straight. And I'm thinking to myself, I jumped a curb? Wow. I feel like I would remember that. I feel like I would have known that. I feel like I would have felt that. This is 2 seconds ago. I jumped a curb. I don't know what he's talking about. Wow. I shut right up. Right up. I'm thinking to myself, but I think you jumped a curb, Chael. You're a bit of a doofus, aside from not understanding that a sign that says only doesn't mean only turn and then do whatever you want to do. Hey, right, in all fairness, I'm with the cop. I'm rolling with the cop. I'm on his side of it. So, after I get the ticket, I now turn around and I've got to return to the four-way stop, but now I can see and there is no curb. There is something. There is a something. But it's not a curb, and I get to thinking to myself, well, maybe I don't know what curb means. In my mind, a curb stop would stop you, right? If you were rolling a ball and it hit a curb, it would stop. If you were water and you were coming through and it hit the curb, it would stop. I understand you can jump and I understand you can go up. You understand my point. Like there would less, at least be an intent to stop. And there's no such thing. There is no such raised structure in the street. So I didn't jump a curb. I couldn't have jumped a curb. There isn't a curb. If my interpretation of curb is correct, which in fairness, maybe I got that wrong. Now, I'm only telling you this because as soon as I see that there's not a curb, it does change things. And the officer, we're at a four-way stop. You got to picture this in your head. You got to either picture this in your head or just click on a different video because I'm dead in the water here, right? I want you to picture the four-way stop. We're facing each other. The only thing that made this a moving violation, the only thing that made this illegal was the sign. Might sound simple, but it's important that we note. It's just like any stop sign, right? Why do you have to stop somewhere? Because the sign says stop. If that sign wasn't there, you don't have to stop. I get the simplisticness, but I need you to understand what made this illegal is the sign. Okay. Now, the officer's on the other side. There is no illusion that he saw the sign. There is no illusion that he knows that there's a sign. And that becomes relevant in court. And I don't believe that's here. I don't think that's hearsay. But it's a word like that. A different time in the officer's life, possibly a minute before. He did see the sign. At a different time in his life, though, he saw a sign. He remembered that he saw the sign. So while the claim is he watched me ignore a sign, while that's the claim, right? He's judging my action. It's my action that he's judging. But he deems that that action is wrong because of a sign that he had previously seen. And you might roll your eyes and say, oh, that's not how it works, Chael. Well, that's the entire reason I'm coming to you. Is that how it works? I'll give you an example maybe you can relate to. There are certain places of the country where it's wide open road, and there's police that are in airplanes up above. And they will sight you. They will do the radar and sight how fast a guy's going on one of these long, windy, open country roads that's got nothing in between. And then he'll call that down, and an officer will pull you over and ticket you and tell you why. You were caught on radar. You were going this speed. Here's your ticket. Now, if you were to fight that and show up to court, and the officer that wrote you the ticket shows up against you, the judge will always go at the officer. You have to know the right words to say, and the right words that if you say, he will see it your way, which is, that's hearsay. This officer did not clock me. He was contacted by somebody else who allegedly clocked me, and that person isn't here today. And yeah, that's the game. That is true. That person would have to be there. So with that in mind, which isn't completely the same situation, But with that in mind, where you have an officer who decided I did a violation, and the only thing that makes it a violation is the sign, but he could not and did not see the sign. He just couldn't. He was in the wrong spot. Only I could have seen the sign. If you were to argue that and say, Chael, that's silly, you can see, no, you cannot. You can see the back of the sign, but now you're making a great guess on what on the front of it. You're making a great guess that it wasn't obstructed. You're making a great guess that it wasn't graffitied over. I realize the silliness that it may say. I'm talking about a technicality. I'm thinking of fighting this one out. I don't want to. I find that stuff annoying. Not to mention, I'm grateful the guy was there. It was raining. He's still out doing his job. Like, this is a good dude. For sure. But he said I jumped a curb. And there is no curb. If I know what a curb means. And in fairness to you and the officer, and I know he's watching this, I've never looked it up. Maybe I don't know what a curb means. But not only did I not jump what I know is a curb, there's not even one there. And when there is a sign that got added that says turn only, I think I'm reasonable for thinking that means if you're going to turn. And that's not the law, and that's not my argument. By the way, it doesn't matter if I'm reasonable or not. I'm sharing with you why I thought what I thought. He says there's a sign. But he's also got to say he couldn't see it. At some other point in his life, he might have seen it and used that as the decision. I don't know. I'm just here to ask you guys, would that work? If I plead not guilty and he is going to have to testify, I could not see a sign, but I believe one was there. There was yesterday. Is he going to win? Or am I? I don't dispute who's right on the law, by the way. I'm asking you, right? There's technicality. What do you think? Do I plead not guilty, or do I just fill out the check? Buddy, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And thank you to those of you who are leaving me reviews on Apple Podcasts and submitting ratings over on Spotify. I read every single one of them. And I really enjoy it when you guys give me feedback. Much more UFC 302 to discuss on Friday, folks. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.